Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific. 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
All right, everybody. It's Monday night, and that means it's time for the Constitution Hour. I will be your host, Ron Golden, and the Constitution Hour is made possible by the good folks over at PatriotFamilies.com. That's PatriotFamilies with a Y-S. .com. Anyone that wants to join in the conversation this evening is more than welcome to call in. We do have a call-in line that you are more than welcome to utilize. Our number is 646-378-0321. Again, that's area code 646-378-0321. Before I start talking about, sorry, hopefully that's better. Before I get into the other items that I have rolling around in my head today, I wanted to share with you a brief conversation I had with a gentleman on another forum, and it's just illustrative of how we can turn the tables on some of our more liberal-minded acquaintances and friends. Now, this gentleman is a self-avowed atheist and also a liberal who admittedly says he voted for Obama twice, but now he regrets it. The discussion was over oil and oil prices and the government subsidizing corporations. And he was carrying on with another gentleman, and he said, "You are for spending the taxpayers' blood and money to prop up private companies. I am not." Germans spend about $10 a gallon for gas, and their economy is doing well. The notion that increased prices for fuel would spell our demise is absurd. And I told him, what a racist. So you just want to keep blacks and minorities from being able to drive a car and hold down a job. What an elitist pig. I still haven't gotten a response. It'll probably take him a week to think up of something to say. They just hate it when you use their own rhetoric and nonsensical tactics against them. And in keeping with the race theme, let's talk about what's going on in Ferguson, Missouri. This poor, innocent young man struck down in his youth, ready to head off for college, struck down by a militant white police officer simply for jaywalking. That is one side of the story. The other side of the story is an 18-year-old thug who's a member of the Blood Gang, which is why we see many photos of him wearing the color red, and his little cap, his little blue cap with the red bill, who had just committed a strong-armed robbery at a convenience store of a pack of Swisher Sweet cigars. I'm willing to bet they were strawberry-flavored, but that's neither here nor there. Of course, I'm presuming a lot to think that the reason he was stealing a pack of Swisher Sweet cigars was to use them as blunts. For those of my more mature audience who may not fully know or understand what a blunt is, that is a cigar, typically Swisher Sweet cigars, wherein the cigar is usually cut down and the tobacco rolled out of the center of it, and a marijuana cigarette or joint is tucked inside of it, and helps mask the dead skunk odor of the marijuana when they're smoking it, and it seems to be a favorite practice of a specific segment of our society, ethnically speaking. I know my son-in-law was a proponent of the blunt, as if it actually disguised his activities. Nonetheless, this 18-year-old thug who just completed a strong-arm robbery, walking down the middle of the street with his friend, not a care in the world, not worried about being confronted or challenged by law enforcement, actually was confronted or challenged by law enforcement. And I believe his accomplice, I mean friend's testimony, when he said that the police officer rolled up on them in his pickup truck and told them to get the F out of the middle of the street. I believe that they gave the police officer some gruff back and said they were almost at the house and they weren't hurting anybody. At which time the police officer continued down the road. When the call came in on the radio about the robbery at the Quick Trip of a pack of Swisher Sweet cigars, the officer said, hey, wait a minute, that dude was toting a pack of cigars, and they matched the description. And the accomplice, I mean friend, testified. Then the officer suddenly threw his vehicle in reverse and backed up very rapidly, swinging sideways and blocking the road entirely from both directions, at which time, according to the friend slash accomplice, the officer tried to open his door very rapidly, and it slammed into them, slamming the door back shut on the officer. And it was merely because he had gotten so close to them with his vehicle. It was not, as another eyewitness stated, the guy shoving the door closed and trying to beat the officer through the open window of the vehicle. And at some point, a struggle ensued for the weapon, at which point the officer was able to clear his weapon, and the young man took off running down the street. At which point the officer got out of the vehicle, yelled for them to stop, began to give chase, and this thug turned around and charged at the cop. And then and only then was he shot multiple times. Eyewitnesses saw the thug running towards the officer as the shots were being fired, and he continued to run at the officer. And the witness thought the officer must have missed, not realizing that he had shot the guy four times in the right arm before giving him two headshots that brought him down. And now we have the various array of race pimps and race baiters and disgruntled, you know, Al Sharpton. I mean, these guys, this poor, you know, they want to paint a portrait of this fella as just, you know, another Trayvon Martin, just a good boy that would never hurt a fly and just went to the store for his grandmammy to fill her prescription because she's too feeble to make it to the store. There is, of course, as we're all aware, more than one segment of society in this country or this collection of states that we call the nation. And there are various socioeconomic levels, black, white, and every other ethnic group that makes up and comprises the United States of America. It is difficult enough to try to look at everyone through the same eyes and not make rash judgments on people. But what we've seen in the last 10 years or so, probably more like 20. There has been a culture that has been fostered and nurtured largely in the black community, but also in parts of the white community. And it is very largely upheld through the hip-hop music, I guess is what they call it. But it's an entire culture that has grown up in our midst. And it attracts a certain style or type of mentality, a mindset, an ideology, a way of thinking. And it appeals to a very broad segment of our society, regardless of what their ethnic origins may or may not be. I, for one, am not a huge fan of the police craft or trade as it has been used now, in the past, and I'm sure will continue in the future, as a tool. And it is nothing more than an extension of government, and it does have a proper role. The police state, the police power of the state, does have a proper role, and when that power is used properly, there's nothing wrong with it. Incidents like this going on in Ferguson, Missouri, will occur. There's no such thing as perfect in our society. However, there are times when the law is used to do things that are illegal. And unfortunately, there is a large segment of our society, mainly the black community in our country, where the law was used to subvert them, to humiliate them, to punish them, to try and control them, and control them in a manner that was not in keeping with the spirit of our Declaration of Independence. That, in and of itself, is a tragedy. Just as whites were not the only slave owners in the United States prior to 1860, a lot of people don't know that there was a very large group of black slave owners, disproportionately large in consideration of the per capita instance of blacks versus whites back in those days. There was a disproportionately large number of black slave owners. People don't like to talk about that fact because it doesn't fit the narrative. I've always held as one of my inspirational heroes a lady named Rosa Parks. You know, one of the things that really pisses me off, probably more than any single thing, is when people hide behind the law as justification for doing something that's just not right. And in those instances, I say the law be damned. It is no law. It is unconstitutional. Imagine if Miss Parks had just succumbed to the old, well, it's the law, you know. But she didn't. Oh, she probably had for quite some time, probably most of her life. She had looked the other way, tolerated it, accepted that, well, that's just the way it is. It's the law. Don't rock the boat, and, you know, all the various other old adages. And it's a, you know, it's a conversation that I've had very recently, and it creates a heated debate at times. But I think it is a conversation worth having. The question has been asked many times by yours truly, on this program and elsewhere, where does the authority come from? And when does that authority cross the line? When is it appropriate and when is it not appropriate? And most of all, and most importantly, who decides? Who decides? Is it a majority that decides? Because if we agree that, you know, well, the voters voted it in, the legislature passed it, right? And it's law. So, you know, that's just the way it is. Well, then, what are we to make of slavery? After all, it was the law, wasn't it? The majority voted it in. I'm pretty certain that the slaves didn't get a vote in that. But it really doesn't matter, does it? Because, I mean, golly gee, after all, it was the law. I think we can all recognize that while it sure was the law, it wasn't right. Why wasn't it right? What is it that makes slavery not right, whether it's voted in favorably by a majority or not? Well, I think we're all grown up and adult enough to say that, you know, it's not right because you don't have the authority to own another human being as your personal property. Period. It's pretty easy. So, from there, you know, we can work backwards and try to look at each law on its face. Now, there are arguments to be made over many laws that you could make rational arguments in favor of them, but that doesn't mean that they're right. Let's take, for instance, a gun law, any gun law. And let's be totally honest here. Do you believe that writing some words on a piece of paper solves your problem of any kind of criminal behavior? I've never seen it happen. Now, there are those people that would argue that something like, say, the death penalty. Well, people argue that it's not a deterrent. I disagree. I think that the death penalty is one of those punishments that actually is a deterrent. I don't think that it's going to deter future crime by other individuals. But you can rest assured that the guy swinging from the end of the rope has committed his last crime. Period. So in that sense, it is a deterrent. But without getting too far afield, you know, we go back to the gun laws. Do you think that it's possible if we outlawed guns, firearms, entirely, rounded them all up, if it were possible, and I don't believe that's possible, if we got rid of all firearms out of society, do you think that firearms-related crimes would go down? I'm sure they would. Do you think that lives might even be saved? Probably so. And if you follow the court and the way that they rule on things, the court would say that your right to keep and bear arms has not been infringed on simply because we've outlawed guns. Guns are only one form of arms, folks. There are all kinds of methods of arming yourself. You can take up baseball bats, swords, knives, slingshots, bow and arrow, crossbows. I mean, there's any number of other weapons available to you, and I can see a time when that's the way the court will rule. You know, there was a case in California, a gentleman who wanted to renew his driver's license, but the state refused because he would not divulge his Social Security number. So he sued the state of California. And he said that they were, among other things, they were violating his constitutional right to travel. And the court ruled that they weren't doing any such thing. And while he may be denied the ability to get behind the wheel of an automobile, it didn't stop him from riding with someone else who had a driver's license in an automobile, or taking the Greyhound bus, or riding a bicycle, or even walking. So his constitutional right to travel was perfectly intact, and simply because he had been denied one mode of travel, there was no violation of his right to travel. None whatsoever. And the same argument will hold true and can hold true. This is, you know, precedent for other things. We've got to, ladies and gentlemen, stand up just as strong and just as forcefully when the law gets it wrong as we do when we try to force feed some BS law or some law that we think is really necessary and really a good law, and we get passionate about it and we want to push it through. We got to be careful what we try to force on others, you see, because we're overstepping our authority when we do that. We don't have that right. We never had it. And if we don't have that right, we cannot grant that right to someone else or a group of someone else's and call them government. It can't be done. It is done. It's done all the time. But doesn't make it right. And I believe I have on the line with me Miss Linda Sills. How are you, Miss Linda?
Fine, Ron. How's everybody in the chat room? Everybody back there? You know, it's funny when you opened with the Ferguson situation. There's so many facets to this. And one of my questions was because, you know, the media frenzy, of course, you've got the race baiters, you've got the freaking Black Panthers out there, and now there's rumors that the government's orchestrating all, you know. I mean, it's just a circus. But whenever there's a cop-involved shooting, is there not an internal affairs department that will handle this?
Well, there is, and in this specific instance, and you know, I think they're doing the right thing the way they're handling this down in Missouri. Here's the funny thing, or the irony. You know, if there's anytime there's an officer involved shooting, they do an internal investigation.
Right.
Well, you know, the IRS did their own internal investigation into the IRS also.
Well,
so, I mean, you
know
let's not. No,
yeah,
I understand where you're coming from, but at the same time,
I'm talking about those.
Let's not,
they call it IAD, yeah. And most cops
are
kind of afraid of IAD. They might lose their pensions if there's, you know, it was not a
good
shoot.
I think a lot of that is probably a misnomer, and I think a lot of it comes from television, unfortunately. You know, can the police do a fair and impartial investigation internally? I think they can, but at the same time, you know, I think that there is the appearance of impropriety is rife for people to point the finger and say, oh, that's BS. So I think, as far as government is concerned, anytime we have an incident like that, there should be an outside agency or group unaffiliated.
Yeah.
Right, that does the investigation just for the sake of transparency, you know, and to keep everything on an even keel. I think that's just reasonable.
Well, you know, there was a case, and I know Glenn touched on it quite a bit. I think it was in New Mexico. But when they got this guy for saying that he was jiggling pants or something, and or whatever the hell it was, and they put him through hell. Well, there was some. Now we all know how some of us feel about lawyers, but in this case, the lawyers were necessary, and they went after that freaking department. They probably own that department. They got a good settlement for this guy, and rightfully so, because this, you know, you can deal with it that way. If something, you know, if the parents of this kid, if it comes out that this was a bad shoot, they can go after it. You know, who knows? We don't know the facts. But the one in New Mexico was clear, and they got and I'm glad they sued him for millions and got it. You know, what they put that guy through, oh, my Lord.
Well, and here's the thing. If the militarization of the police and, you know, all these things, one of the things that technology has brought us is that a lot of the bad actors in law enforcement are getting caught publicly for being the hot-headed jackasses that they are.
That they can be, yeah.
And for doing, but the ones that are getting caught are, you know, that's just it.
Yes.
They're just being jerks. They put that badge on and they suddenly have, Napoleon
Gestapo
complex and they think they're the freaking emperor. So there is that group of them out there in law enforcement. There's also a huge group that are awesome people and they take their job very seriously and they care about people in their community. And regardless of what the intent is of the police power of the state, the police power of the state was not meant to be a protective thing for individuals.
Right.
The police power is not, it's not there to be your bodyguard. There to guard something. It's to protect something, all right, but it's not individuals. What the police power of the state is there to protect is the integrity of the law.
Exactly.
And to bring those to justice that violate the law. The question then comes back full circle, who watches the watchers, basically?
Exactly.
And that's our job.
You're damn right it is, and that's where we have fallen down, and we did not heed Ben Franklin's warning to keep the republic. Boy, I wish we had.
There's a lot of things we haven't heeded, unfortunately, and, only now are we beginning to realize
it. And what I can't remember which one it was, but one of the guys locally here in the talk shows was talking about, generally, not on Ferguson, but this was prior to this, speaking about who is the first responder. Well, you and I are, okay? The police usually come, try to arrest the bad guys if there's a perpetrator harming your family, and they clean up the mess. They're not there to be your personal bodyguard. You have to have money for that kind of thing. And anyone who has those bodyguards, and we all know that. You know, the Hollywood elites, the freaking senators, and the rest of them. But that's the whole point of them. They do investigations. They do forensic analysis. When I had an incident, they came in, they dusted the whole house, took statements, probably took pictures. I mean, they do. And then the people there, and this was in Van Nuys, you can't even believe the segment of L.A. had such a good group. They had a great group who specialized in rape and robbery in that area. I'm not kidding. They treated me so good, Ron. I can't tell you. They did everything in their, the right way. They followed protocol. It was like to the letter. And I know that was like 1987, but there are good cops out there. And some of the guys who wear the suits are the detectives. They're amazing. They're not stupid people.
Not at all. And clearly, the perception of reality is changing, and it's, I think, startling to a lot of people in our society to see, SWAT teams in up armored, MRAPs and military paraphernalia and running around. I mean, we've got guys here that the HEAT, HEAT, and they're a de facto SWAT team, they think. They run around in black uniforms and the whole nine yards. I get it. People look at that and they're like, that's not policing. That is something different. Okay, right. I mean, you guys are looking an awful lot like the SS over here. we haven't gotten to that point yet, but it's just the fact that the state is more and more and more seeing its citizens as the enemy, and there are segments within our society that are more than happy to oblige and take on the role of the enemy, and I think we're seeing that play out in Ferguson. We saw it play out in the L.A. riots. We've seen it play out in other areas of our country, Detroit, Chicago. So there is this excuse that is used on both sides to go above and beyond the law, and neither side is no one's hands are clean in all of this.
Yeah.
Okay? And they're
Here's
both
what
trying
I'm hearing.
To play it for all it's worth.
Now, this is, now, I don't know where the facts lie on this, but this is what I'm hearing from the local talk show guys who are conservatives or consider themselves. Yeah. As such, anyway, they're talking about that the federal government has all this extra stuff, and they don't know what to do with it because of the wind down in Afghani and Iraq, and they're giving to or selling it at 10 cents on the dollar to all these agencies, including superintendent school areas. What the hell do they need an armored tank for? They now have flamethrowers, or to quote my friend Roger Hedgecock, oh, maybe a small nuke. That'd be a better idea. I mean, what the hell is going on? Ridiculous. This is idiocy on parade.
Part of what's going on there is the renewal of, defense contracts.
Oh.
And so you have to show a need. So you get rid of some of the old equipment by giving it away or selling it for a dollar a piece or whatever. And it has a twofold effect. Number one, you're diminishing your motor pool of various things. Because don't forget, that the state National Guard units also get hand-me-down military stuff.
And
when I was in, when I was in 88, we were still driving World War II era Jeeps, and Vietnam era pickup trucks, they have. There's an outlet. There's a place that they could go to get rid of some of that equipment. But the problem is a lot of these National Guard units are deployed around the globe, currently fighting this war on the evil Islamic boogeymen around the world. And we must be thinking that the Islamic boogeyman is wearing thin because we're reinflating the evil communist horde as we speak. So, but I also think that the evil communist horde has more to do with there is a war on currency afoot, and it's been going on for a while, and it's heating up more rapidly. And I've talked about that on this program. And I believe we have the distinguished gentleman from Florida on the line with us.
Mr. Kaplan.
A gentleman that's running for office down there, Mr. Robert Kaplan.
Puzzle time,
well, Mr. Ron, Ms. Linda, how are y'all tonight?
Hey.
I'm doing well, Robert. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm fighting a good battle here. It's just a battle, Mr. Ron. It's terrible. It's awful.
It's
awful.
Messy, isn't it?
Well, you know what? I got them pretty good because you know why, sir? I figured out how Governor Scott created the $700 billion surplus. Would you like to hear my interpretation? Would you like to hear my interpretation?
Was this a Slick Willie surplus, sleight of hand move?
No, this is what happened, Ron. Let me explain the story to you. I went to the Republican Party, right? Early voting started Saturday the 16th, and it was raining cats and dogs. I was getting wet I'm singing in the rain, and I my baseball hat was dripping. I was playing the part as a psychopath.
Did you put your hoodie up when you?
No, I said that's a good one. I have to do that, Mr. Ron. Thank you for the suggestion. Thank you. So anyhow, this doctor gets into my face, sir. He says, "Who paid you to run?" I go, "Excuse me? Who paid you to run?" I said, "No one paid me to run. You know Shiloh closed the primaries. He said, if I hadn't run, he would have closed the primaries. He was paid to close the primaries." Right?
You should have looked at him and said, "The ADL, who do you think?"
he kept on. He got his chest was meeting my chest, sir. His chest was meeting my chest. I said, "You don't want to mess with me. I don't care what kind of doctor you are.
You want a piece of me?"
Yeah, exactly, man. I swear to God, Ron. So I said. He goes, "This is not about a 30K race. this is about there's a 700 billion surplus Scott created. I go, is that so? He got me thinking, right? I said, isn't that something that you should say that? He goes, you're ignorant. I said, I beg to differ, sir. You better get your facts straight. Mrs. Gonzalez, Julio, my opponent, got in between us and made him go away and leave me alone. He didn't understand the story. Julio straightened him out. He's our friend, and leave him alone. Shiloh closed the primaries. So, I went to play a gig last night. You know, I'm back in the scene again. I was thinking about it. I was talking to people. They were jarring my brain. And you know what that son of a bitch Scott did? This is how he created the $700 billion surplus. Remember my explanation, my wife, Leonie, her salary for the state was $1,100, remember?
Okay.
When I first met her. Okay. Then about maybe a month or two later, when I first met her, her salary was cut $750 a week by the state. So I did some research. I'm just using my wife's cut as an example of a $36,000 a year salary. All right. So when you multiply, there are 130. Supposedly, I looked it up on the internet, and supposedly there are 131 employees for the state of Florida. So let's say hypothetically, Sir Ron, that you multiply 36K times 131. Well, my answer was approximately, as a statistician would say, $473 million, surplus.
Okay.
I do not know what the other numbers are. I'm sure there's other employees that are making $80,000 a year that used to be making $100,000 a year. So,
well,
you know,
I think I know where you're headed, and that may be part of it, that, you know, the governor was able to reduce government employee salaries. But I doubt that would accomplish an entire $750 billion surplus.
No, I'm just making a point. I was trying to make a point. The point is it was a part of the $700 billion.
Certainly.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. It was a part of the $700 billion. And they didn't like that. My opponents did. Gonzalez does not like it. He hacked my Facebook page, Mr. Ron. He put my friends on his page, and he put another friend, my friend Susan Nyland, who's also a Sarasota Taco Show, supposed to be a social liberal, but she friended me, and her page is on my. She friended me on Facebook.
Well, you see, my complaint wouldn't necessarily be with how we arrived at a $750 billion surplus. My question would be, now that you've got it, what the hell are you doing with it? How are you, you know, what are the plans to return that money back to the taxpayers of Florida?
That's
who the money actually belongs to.
Yeah,
see, because government was supposed to be run on a surplus. You're right on the money, Ron.
You're right on the money. And you know why, Ron? Because now I'm facing how the medical marijuana bill is going to be taxed, okay? Not only that, I'm facing whether or not I should let gambling casinos come into the state of Florida, and whether everybody wants to vote no. I still am not sure about that. I don't know where I stand yet. okay? I don't want to pass a bill, sir, that's going to harm my constituents, period. You understand? I really don't. And I don't know what to do now. I'm so sad, Ron. I'm very, very sad.
You know, my question would be much more geared towards the Constitution.
I'm trying to follow the rule of law, sir, but it's impossible with these jerks.
I would want to ask someone because, you know, we had a local representative here at our state capitol ask the very same thing, and half of the legislators in the state said he was a kook. And unfortunately, he's since passed away.
They're trying to make me the kook too, and I'm playing the part, and it's really upsetting them. I want to read something to you that I personally wrote to my opponent.
I want to give you this before you read that. You need to ask them if they believe in the Constitution.
They don't.
But you know to a man, they will say yes. Now, this goes directly to the point of your $750 billion quote-unquote surplus. Okay? Article 1, Section 10. No state shall coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts.
Right.
Okay. Now, if we were listening to the program last week, we know that every Federal Reserve note is a debt obligation, and the liability for that repayment of that debt note lies with you and I.
Exactly.
Right?
I understand.
So if your state of Florida is accepting something other than gold and silver coin, they're not accepting payment of any debts. They're accepting the exchange or tender of debt obligation notes. And if they have a surplus of $750 billion Federal Reserve notes, then what they actually have is a surplus of $750 billion of taxpayer debt obligations.
Thank you. That's my point. Thank you, sir.
So it's not a surplus of any kind. It's no surplus at all. What it is just they have a large volume of additional debt obligation notes laying around that aren't being passed off as money.
Linda, let me explain something to you. They hacked my Facebook page. They hacked my Facebook. They hacked my Facebook website. Okay, for my campaign, Facebook is slowing down my campaign for not making me any friends. Okay, they're doing everything in their power to slow my campaign. So this is what I said to them today after the cops came to my home. The cops came to my home and suggested that I call a forensic computer guy, which I did. And he determined it was socially hacked. So this is what I wrote to my opponent. I said, very disappointed Julio, the guy that got into my face. The good doctor and Nancy, the one that left my debate, will be hearing from me soon. I hope your fingers will not have infection like my leg that I almost lost back in May, which he's got a voter phone, okay? He's got a voter phone thinking he's hot, you know what? I accidentally said rook. I said, you rook my – in other words, you took my page. It was a typo. I said, you rook my page down before the police came, and you placed my page – Susan Nylon's page, the one with the radio show, up again after the police left. What kind of attorney are you? Answer, shameful. You'll be hearing from my attorney. You have much, this is for you, Linda. You have much chutzpah to ask about privacy with the social media. I believe I deserve the $1 million you and Richard D. spent together, as you should change your name to Richard's nickname. I accidentally said Rook. I accidentally said Rook instead of Took, but may we should place a C in front of the Rook. My Governor Scott is a Rook without the C. You must think your letters speak for themselves. I say my freedom of speech rights are the rule of law, which you and Richard D. have no concept of res ipsa loquitur, words that speak for themselves. I want you to look this Jewish word up, and I am not accusing anyone what it means. But when someone takes money or someone else is pillar of the community, as my dad was in his time, the Jewish word is this, ganav, because the Kaplans did not play second fiddle to anyone. That's exactly what I said to him.
Wow.
You understand?
Yes.
This is what I'm dealing with, Linda.
Robert, you're going in a congressional. You're trying to get a congressional seat in the United States. I'm dealing with crazy, backhanded nonsense right in my own neighborhood. You should factions. I'm going to talk about it on my show. These people are nuts. I mean,
Judge
if this
Jeanine,
is going
Judge
on in
Jeanine,
the...
But you don't understand. Judge Jeanine blocked me from her group page. She took me off.
Oh, my God.
Because I was sending them articles. I was sending them articles... of what's going on. I was informing them. I was educating them about my county. And they didn't like
it. I know.
So
they don't like
Robert, it. I'm telling you, the only option, you got to wear the boots and the towel and the cowboy hat or the yarmulke.
No, there's another option. You know what I'm going to do, Ron? I'm going to get my snare drum. And I'm just going to just walk around the town of Venice playing rudiments and get people's attention.
Put the towel and the yarmulke and the red tennis shoes.
I'll put the towel and the yarmulke for you, too.
No, the cowboy boots trimmed down at the top so they don't chafe.
But did I nail that? Did I nail that letter on the head? Did I fight back?
That was pretty good. That was good. Yeah,
what
proud of you, Robert.
What a shameful guy. And Rubio supported him, and Rubio lost my vote because I attacked Rubio too.
that's one of the problems that people have when they come from behind the couch and the keyboard and whatnot, and really begin to get involved with politics, even at the local level. Politics, you begin to see just what a bunch of Shylocks, shysters and crooks and lying bastards these people really are. And we wonder, you know, and George Carlin had it right. You know, Carlin was talking about voting. And he said, you know, where do you think these politicians come from? They didn't pass through some membrane in a time warp from a different dimension. They come from us. They come from our society, and this is the best we have to offer.
It's sad. So you keep fighting, Robert.
But you know what, Linda? I'm doing my job. I'm getting in their face like Ron advised me to do, and I'm doing it. I'm fighting the fight.
You know? Look.
Yeah,
I don't have nothing to lose.
You're right.
People talk about special interests in politics. Politics is purely special interest. You don't get on the ballot and get backing and financial support unless you're kissing someone's behind or unless you have the ability to promise to deliver for your corporate sponsors behind kissing.
And they're not gonna kiss anybody's ass. That's the whole point. The only thing Julio did was kiss Rubio's ass and got his endorsement.
And here's what I'm saying, Robert and Ron, just in the local, when you kind of nailed it, Ron. But what they are is not just shysters. These people are backstabbers. They will stab anybody who disagrees with them or they think they're losing against, they will just vilify. They will use Saul Alinsky. They will use Stalin tactics. They'll do anything they can. Look what they did to Rick Perry because of what he's doing on the border and other reasons.
Look, I had a great video that I posted. Oh, God, it's been a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the video was taken by a woman and her husband that went to the state capitol in Texas. And this is just a microcosm of what goes on, okay? Now, Texas has a law that was passed by the state legislature, presumably, that only members that are present on the floor at the time a legislative vote is being cast, only those members that are actually present can vote. And this woman and her husband sitting up
say that one more time.
Only those members of the legislature that are present during a legislative vote are allowed to cast a vote for the legislation being voted on. Now,
let me make a quick point, Ron. I don't mean to interrupt, but I have to stop you there. The point is my state legislature is trying to decide whether a true representation of a letter is true to open up a business. Do you understand that? Do you understand that concept? I don't understand that concept. My own state legislature is voting to whether to see, dear Ron, dear sir, my name is Ron Goldman. I am opening a business. I'm opening up a new radio show for my own business. Please, blah, 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 contact me. Signed, Ron Goldman. They're trying to determine whether that is not true representation of a business. Does that make any sense to y'all? You tell me.
Not at all. Let me finish with this woman and her husband sitting in the gallery in the state capitol watching their state legislature in session. And there was a vote on the floor. And there were some 60-odd members present.
Right.
And there were 280 votes cast.
Mister. Wow.
And they caught it on film.
You just blew me away.
There was one representative in particular. They counted 6 votes that he cast in a matter of 30 seconds.
Oh, my God.
Because, you see, it's like playing Jeopardy. They have a little buzzer in front of them with a red light, green light, yes or no.
Oh my gosh.
And he was a Democrat, the guy they happened to catch, you know, with the 6 votes. But so he voted no. He reached over to his partner, who was a Republican, voted no for him.
Voted no
for the guy to his left. Turned around and voted no for 3 people that sat behind him that also were not present.
Oh my gosh, Jesus!
So you see, this was not only just this one guy. Everybody on the floor was scrambling around pushing buttons.
Well, that's what they do, Ron. They're trying to push
buttons. And when it was brought to the attention of the state attorney general, she said, we take matters like this very serious, but honestly, the amount of time that we're given on any specific vote, while we may be in committee hearings and this, that, and the other, it's understandable why this occurs. It's against state law, and it's the biggest freaking fraud on the face of the planet. I will take you back to a question that I've asked previously. When I look into the Georgia state code under Title I, Section 10, Subsection 4, called Specific Repealer, I noticed that in the state of Georgia, in March of 1933, something really breathtaking took place. It has apparently occurred twice since then, both times in the 80s. But you had a vote of the state legislature to repeal all of the law on the books at that time, except for the specific ones that they listed as not being repealed, and it's a pretty damn short list. Now,
wow.
In order to repeal a law in our state legislature, just one law, it takes a two-thirds majority vote. Seemingly, the two sides, the Republican and Democrat sides, cannot agree on almost anything on any given day. So my question to you is, aside from what was witnessed taking place in Texas, how do you convince an entire state legislature to vote in favor of repealing all the laws then on the books?
Wow.
Well, that's what's going to happen with Medicare. You know, this guy wants to repeal Obamacare. He's full of bar dust. No one can repeal this law, and no one won't repeal this law. You know,
and
that
I've told you before, Robert. They don't. Look, I told you before. They don't want to repeal it. They just want to change it. They want to replace it. That was the Republican mantra.
It.
Repeal and replace. Okay, so you want to be the one to say this is our idea, see, and it's so much better than the other guy's idea, and it's all a bunch of crap, and the whole thing was written by the damn insurance industry to begin with.
Yep.
And why
exactly.
People can't see that is beyond me.
Well,
I know.
And none of it has any. I'll tell you something, that there's some things that the legislation, the ACA, Obamacare, is not designed to do. Okay, it's not designed to lower the cost to the average Joe for health services from a health services provider, a doctor. Okay, it's not designed to deliver a better level of care or quality of care. And it's really not designed to give insurance to a whole bunch of people that don't already have it.
Right. Never was.
It's none of those things. Never was.
No, never was. Well, you
it's
know,
designed
you,
to be exactly what the court ruled it to be. It's a tax.
It's
welcome
tax.
Home,
it's,
folks.
Thank you.
It
thank
gets
you,
worse.
Ron.
I think it gets worse than that. If you go into the details of it, seriously, and I haven't read the whole thing, but I know Bill Strong has, and his hair is standing on end, shooting blood out of the ends. But, you know, it's all part of the plan. It's all, if this is not just one more little niche of the United Nations Agenda 21, I'd like to know what you call it. Because
it's called euthanasia, Linda. That's all it is. It's euthanasia.
Well, it's worse. It's eugenics. It's everything. It's one of those written into the dogma of what they call law to control the hell out of us. Have every aspect. When you start connecting the dots with the NDAA, the Patriot Act, the technology of the Utah Data Collection Center, the Common Core, this Unaffordable Care Act.
Oh, you know, that's another. I'm
my
glad.
God.
I'm glad you mentioned
that
because.
To my attention, Ron. Common Core. Common Core is changing history.
Let me ask you something.
Beyond.
How many folks here remember, right here on the Constitution Hour, hearing the radio report about the Unified Police Department in Utah?
I don't remember that one.
Do you remember
I
me talking about that? Salt Lake, Utah.
Oh, yes.
And their
yes.
Unified Police Department. So
yes.
What they did was they created a countywide...
Oh God! It's evil.
Single unified police department. So the city police departments no longer had authority. It was all run by one unified police department that encompassed all the cities within the county, and it was done by the sheriff without a vote. And they were sending people a bill in the mail for their share of paying for this new unified police department. And wouldn't you know, listening to the news reports about Ferguson, Missouri, on my way home tonight, I heard on the radio a state legislator saying that he felt that bringing in the National Guard was taking the right steps in protecting the Ferguson, you know, the St. Louis County Unified Police Department.
Oh, my God.
And I heard that, and I thought, really?
Oh, my God. Well, talk about the SF.
Well, what it is, I mean, truly what it is, it's the first steps towards what Ronald Reagan advocated for during his governorship of California. It's the first steps towards what's called regionalization.
Yes, it is. And this goes back to, Ron, you and I know this because you and I have done the research. This goes back to the Georgia Guidestones. This goes to the UN back in even Wilson's time. And probably further back than that, because Mandel House was whispering into his ear about the League of Nations, among other things, which was subsequently called Social Security. He called it and whispered into Wilson's ear, social insurance. And he says, once we do that, we've got them forever. I'm telling you, you got to look behind the scenes, and you know this. I mean,
absolutely.
Whispering into Lincoln.
How many people remember George H.W. Bush and his 1,000 points of light?
Sure.
Yep.
Okay. Now, does anyone know what Wilson's plan was called for the League of Nations?
No, I don't remember that because I didn't read the entire story, but I knew he went on several thousand whistle stops and they weren't ready for it until after they went through two world wars, which was
well,
probably another
you know, he had this plan. And his plan was, and I forget the number, I'll probably get it wrong, but I believe it was his 12 points of light.
That's right. Thank you. So I have 12. I have 12 stands on my website. Exactly 12.
Well,
I have.
Look. Ron, it boils down to the same philosophy, and how many times you have to go over it. That's why the really cool philosophers and the people like Jefferson and John Locke and the rest of them, they got it. They absolutely got it. And I have actually posted on Facebook because I remember you reading Patrick Henry's entire speech, which was amazing when you did that. And I found the whole, it was in one of my history books, and I can't remember who the author was, but I read the entire thing, and it was absolutely astounding. People have no idea, and now they're going to dumb everybody down. What I need to do is, next time I email you, Robert, I want you to give me your physical address, and I'll mail you the Common Core connection to
absolutely,
Agenda 21.
Absolutely, because I said I was for it, and I shouldn't have said it, and I made a mistake, and he beat the crap out of me, and I deserved it. So, but now that I understand what he meant, the Common Core basically, Linda, is changing history. Nobody's going to change history on my dime.
It's worse than that. If I send this to you, it's only 70 minutes long, and it's a DVD. You put it in your machine, and you watch it on TV, and you will see them connect the dots about halfway through it with Agenda 21. I'm telling you, it's phenomenal. So
I'm sure it is.
You know, I put up in the chat room what it was originally, the League of Nations was originally going to be called. The League to Enforce Peace.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
You can take EN off of Enforce.
Yeah, you know,
see, because,
you
again,
know,
it goes back to what I was talking about at the top of the show, and gun control. When you disarm the public, then only the enforcers have arms. And that is what the UN's charter is universal disarmament. And when they say universal, they mean everybody except them.
Oh, yeah.
Linda, Linda, will you do me a favor? Just out of spite, will you have your friends friend me, and I'll friend them back?
Okay, I'll put it out there when I get a minute. But basically, Ron, what you've described is exactly what Stalin did for all those many years he was in charge, and until he was died of a brain tumor or whatever the hell. I don't have to live under North Korea today to understand how much hell these people can wield on others. You know, and it's the truth. People don't understand that. You know, because they're too damn lazy. They just will not pick up a book, for crying out loud. My God.
No.
Let's start with the Bible and then the Constitution, or at least the Declaration, and go further. Get into it. Find out what the original letters and things were doing. God. My IQ's not that big, but I can get it. Jeez.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
Good
Everybody
Lord.
Gets it. But it's a sad state of affairs. You know, I can't even go. I can't even go to a restaurant anymore and can't eat anymore in this town. I swear to God. I can't even introduce myself and tell them I'm running for public office.
You got a taste of what it's like. This is you're going for the big guns here. You know, you're not even just doing city council. You're all the way to the, you know, the cesspool of D.C.
You know what, Linda? If I make it to D.C., I love you guys because you taught me everything you know. You taught me how to fight. And not only did you teach me how to fight, you taught me how to research and back up my statements. And I think I've done a good job. I got under their skin. They don't like me. If I can get a doctor, you know what I told him what he suffered from today? Constipation.
Oh, dear.
I did. I sure did. I most
right,
certainly
Bob.
Did. I'm sorry, but I had to throw that in.
Does that mean because you were full of it, Robert? Oh.
Yeah. I'm always full of it, Ron. Because I had to convince you I was a serious, strong candidate.
Hey, you know, I'm thinking some X-Lax in the water supply at D.C. might just flush that old place right down the toilet.
You don't know how many people I've talked to. You don't know how many people I've met, shook hands with. And you know, I think I'm done campaigning. I think I made my point. I made my case in chief, and I just have to sit back and just smell the coffee and the roses and call it a day. What do you think?
Sounds that way.
78 days. There's only 78 days left in November 4th, ladies and gentlemen.
Did you get to participate in a debate, Robert? A public debate?
Yeah, I won my debate. I beat the crap out of him.
Good.
Let me tell you where Julio and I differ. Okay. Real quick, this is. I have a sour taste in my mouth because of it. Julio and I differ for different reasons when it comes to regulation. And this is the question was from my fellow bull that graduated from University of South Florida. He asked me, Mr. Sam, he called me Sam from my dad because he knew my dad. And he said, what do you think about insurance mandates and premiums in municipalities? And I said, what are you referring to? Referring to, sir. And he goes, well, do you think they should be regulated? I said, isn't that something? I just read that 2 nights ago, and I said, no. That's amazing, isn't it? He says, why do you say no? I said, because this is the explanation. The municipality was to place insurance and premiums on the city, right? But my opponent wants to place the mandates on top of the insurance premiums, correct? You understand that concept? You understanding that concept? And not only does he want to place mandates on top of the insurance and the premiums, he wants to regulate, make the government regulate the city municipality. Now, well, how do you guys feel about that? I said, no, I think the people should control what goes in and what comes out. They didn't like that answer too well. How do you feel about that,
well,
Ron?
Well, I would ask him who, you know, I would want to know, does the city have a pecuniary interest in the stock of these insurance companies? In other words, you know, does the city hold shares of these insurance companies
you're exactly right. The city does hold shares on these insurance premiums, and they want the citizens to foot the bill. You understand?
Precisely. I understand, because they're getting a cut. So they're going to,
explain to me what the cut is, sir. I want to know.
Well, they're shareholders in the corporation that's issuing the insurance policy. Okay?
Yes,
so if the insurance premiums go up, their profits on their stock goes up. I see, said the blind man. You see, if you're in Congress, okay, and you pass a law, Congress that says that no insurance company can make in excess of $10 profit per individual policy per premium cycle, right? Per premium. So if your premium is $180 a month, the company, the insurance company, by this new law that Congress passed, can only make $10 profit. Well, what if the profit on that policy is $150? Well, the insurance company keeps 10. One way for them to get rid of those excess profits is disbursement
to their
shareholders as a dividend.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Which just happens to be the very same government.
What's a dividend?
Yeah, a stock dividend, you know? So it just happens to be the very same government that just issued the new rule or new law that, you know, the maximum profit per policy is $10 per month.
Exactly. So they're putting that $10 per month in their pockets.
No, the insurance company does. The rest of the money is paid out in dividends to the stockholders.
Great. The city.
Yeah, the people are paying taxes for that, right?
Right. And guess who the stockholders are? The city, the county. This is what Walter Burian talks about, the CAFR, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. This is why, say like in the state of California, they got together and created a corporation called CalPERS. It's not in the state of California. It's headquartered in Singapore.
Yep.
Oh, geez.
And the reason it's headquartered in Singapore is because under California state law, no municipality, no government entity, including the state of California, can own more than 3 to 5%. I think the number is 5%. Of stock in any one single company. So the way that you circumvent that, sir, is you turn over all of your pension and investment to an offshore company in Singapore, and they have no such restrictions.
Yes,
so
right.
They can own 100% of the electric power generating plants in California. They can own all the stock. Okay?
Oh,
and guess
God.
What happens? Guess what happens? You never guess. The electric company comes to the state legislature and says, you know, while times are really tough and we're having a hard time just meeting our obligations, we need a rate increase.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
And so the state legislature, you know, they They struggle desperately, but in the end they give in to we had to allow them to increase rates, a one-time 10% rate hike, right? When in reality what that does is it increases by 10% the amount of take that the pension funds are going to earn from their stocks because they own the frickin' company.
You just nailed my platform, sir. That's my platform.
And you see, Robert,
that's why
I was talking about, you know, your $750 billion surplus.
Yes, sir.
Probably goes a lot deeper and a lot further than simply cutting back the salaries of state employees.
Oh, I know, but the state salaries was just an example. That was a quarter of the surplus. That was just a quarter. That was a quarter.
And then again, you look at things like the city of Detroit. How long ago was it we heard Detroit is bankrupt? Anybody heard anything about that recently?
No, I
actually looked at just a brief snippet of Detroit's comprehensive annual financial report, and I see exactly what they're doing. It's quite ingenious, if you want to think about it.
Well,
okay.
Diabolical.
Well, I mean, it's underhanded and it's full of bullcrap, but if you look at the city of Detroit, as far as their pension program goes, right? So let's say if we freeze... Let's play freeze tag, freeze, right now, today. We have 100 employees on pension in Detroit and another 100 that'll go on retirement pension in 10 years, okay? But over the 10 years, it's going to be slowly, and some of the folks that are currently on pension are going to die, and they're not going to be on pension. So for that 10-year window, it pretty much evens out, but we won't take that into account. What Detroit did is say, well, let's look. This is what we have in the bank right now today. In the account for the retirement fund, we've got $1 billion, okay? If we had to pay the next 20 years of pensions today, well, gosh, we're $1 billion short. We're broke.
Oh, my God.
But they have more than enough money. They have more than enough money to continue paying their pensioners for the next 10 years, right, if they don't collect another cent.
Wow.
But if they had to pay it all today, well, they're broke.
Well, that's not logic. That's stupid.
Well,
that's called actuarial accounting.
There is
accrual method, and then there is actuarial. So they're forecasting, taking in, not raising another cent in revenue, and having to pay bills that are going to come due 10 years from now today. Well, in that case, we don't have the money. Well, guess what? Neither do I. I can't pay my mortgage off this year, so I must be bankrupt.
You are. Thank you.
Well, we're all
bankrupt. You know, Linda, real quick, I had to pay $23.75 fine because I didn't file what I spent every week on time. Isn't that sad?
Yeah.
Well, glad you're not in Georgia. Because if you're a lobbyist, Robert, in the state of Georgia, and you're 30 days late filing your report,
right?
It's a $15,000 fine.
Jesus,
dude.
Yeah, you know why they did that? Because they were starting to see a lot of citizen lobbyists show up at the Capitol.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I didn't renew my lobbyist badge for 2010. As I was a registered lobbyist in 2008 and 2009, and they raised the fee from $5 to $300.
Wow.
So and ironically enough, the irony of the whole thing is it's all run out of a building here in Atlanta called the Sloppy Floyd Building, and it is the Ethics Committee that oversees this fiasco.
I would like to let you wrap it up, and Robert, we're very proud of you. Just keep trucking.
I'm very proud of you guys.
God bless you.
I just hope someone, I just better pray that God is with me and I can keep healthy until November.
Exactly.
We will do
fabulous
it.
Fabulous show. Fabulous show.
Thank you, Miss Linda. Robert, thanks for calling in. I'm going to wrap it up, guys.
Thank you for having me, Ron.
Absolutely. God bless. All right, everybody, that was Miss Linda Sills from our Patriot Family show that'll be airing here Wednesday night right from the left coast. And our very own Robert Samuel Kaplan, who's running for office down in Sarasota, Florida. Guys, I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Thanks for calling in and lending your comments and your attention. We want to reach out and let everyone know that we are keeping our own Miss Terry Rowland in our hearts and minds and our prayers. Miss Terry has had a little bout of diverticulitis, so she's been in the hospital, but reports say she's coming home Wednesday, so I hope she's feeling better. Remember to tune in here tomorrow night, Patriot Families, for the Hoot and Holler Show with our very own Bill Strong at 7 p.m., and then again on Wednesday night, 7 p.m., right here, for Miss Linda Sills with Right from the Left Coast. And typically Thursdays at 6 p.m. would be Miss Terry Rowland with Patriot Education. I don't know if Miss Terry will be feeling up to doing her show or not. And also on Thursday nights, I believe, still is going to be Mikey B. out in Texas with Higher Truth Radio. So, guys, try not to get discouraged. I know there's a lot of insanity going on, and it's hard to keep your wits about you when the world is going absolutely insane all around you, but at least we can try. God bless you.
Hey,
thanks for listening.
What's this lying around shit? Well, what the hell is supposed to do, you moron?
War's over, man. Wormer dropped the big one.
What? Over? Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Hell no!
Germans? Forget it, he's rolling.
It ain't over now. Because when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Who's with me? Let's go! Come on!